like in my show, I actually tell the audience I hate magic. Because like if you watch enough talent shows and all that kind of thing, any singer, musician and all that, they can get into the audience and receive a standing ovation in the first 2 seconds. When they are performing, they are actually displaying their skill. For a concert pianist, the camera comes down to their hands, you actually can see how fast and all that kind of thing. Magicians, we practice the same amount, if not more, but we practice so hard just to hide our skills.
Right. You're good if they don't see it.
Correct.
Right.
So that's something I do in my show. And I explain to them this, and then I'll lead into something.
That's brilliant.
So I'll bring a spectator up on stage, and then I'll perform a magic for this person.
Right.
But everybody else gets to see how it's done.
Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Woke Ceremony Podcast. Today we have Jeremy, a magician, and we're going to ask him some questions when it comes to, you know, being a magician, career-wise as a magician, financial challenges of being a magician. You get the idea. So maybe very quickly, Jeremy, you can introduce yourself.
Hi everybody, my name is Jeremy. I'm a professional magician, mainly performing on cruise ships and corporate events. I also dabble in a little bit of social media magic as well. So,
how long have you been a magician?
For slightly over 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So you started, I never worked for anything else, basically.
I think you did say you worked as a waiter that one time
while waiting
for poly or something.
Correct.
But since then, it's been being a magician all the way.
But even then, also, I did magic for the customers. Yeah.
As part of the waitering job.
Correct.
Did they pay you bonus for that?
No.
Wow.
Like simple magic stuff. Just to entertain them while they're waiting for their food and all that kind of
stuff. So you just told your manager, can I just do some magic?
No, I didn't even tell.
You just did it?
Yeah, I just did it.
Wow, it's the value add.
It's the ask for forgiveness, not permission.
Right. Yes.
Wow.
So you started magicianing in your teens, right?
Before I did any gigs, I actually worked in a magic shop. That's how I guess I'm a bit more different from everybody else. And that's actually how I got my gigs, because people would come into the magic shop and then they would see magic and buy magic or whatever. They would ask questions like, oh, you know, we're having a private party or wedding reception or that kind of thing. Would you like to kind of perform? I was like, oh, okay, that'll work.
So it was also a good lead gen.
Correct.
Then, so if working in a magic shop is unusual, like how do normal people, not normal people, like, how do usual magicians start off being magicians?
I think for us, we usually have interest very, very young, very young age. Whether it's receiving their first magic kit or watching magic on TV or that inspire them. We call it getting bitten by the magic bug. Back then, during my time, I would bring my mom to the library, borrow books and all that. And that's how I started learning. And then we go into the era of VHS and DVDs and all that kind of stuff. And of course, me being in a magic shop, I could bring home at the end of the day any things I want to go and watch or learn and all that, because I needed to know the secret so that I can sell or demonstrate the particular product. So that also kind of helped me fast track my way into the magic scene. Like, I suddenly a lot of secrets are being exposed to me, and I know how things work, you know. And therefore, it's like for me easier, lor.
Then when you were like a gig magician, do you have any like financial struggles? I mean, because you mentioned like the income isn't always stable. And
Correct.
15, 16 sound like you're earning quite good money. Then when it started to... I always think this is the test, whether you can bring it into adulthood. And then what that's like.
I agree.
Right. So did you have any downs after
downs, that? So many downs.
15, 16.
There are times where I go to the ATM to cash out money back then. And I got money, but it's below the minimum.
It's $20.
Yeah,
I know this because I used to have very bad spending habits. Once below $20, right, I everything have to use Nets. Everything like, can you use Nets or not? Can you use Nets or not? They're like, oh, cannot. Then, oh my god, I guess I'm screwed.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, that's what it is, right? When I was younger, some of the financial struggles would be, you know, like, oh, I want to buy this magic trick, but actually I got not enough money to eat. Let alone support the family, you know.
So I understand there's probably like some variance, right? Like in how much like magicians earn. But would you say like, let's just say if you put in like decent effort every month, like what do you think is like a fair average monthly salary?
I think about 5 to 8K.
5 to 8K. Mm. Oh, that's not bad.
5 to 8K. Yeah.
Above median, certainly.
Correct, but it's not stable, you see. Mm. It really depends on, you know, that month got more gigs or not and all that.
How long does it take to be established?
Well, it really depends, like, because of like the skill of the magician, and also it's show business, right?
Yep.
So the business side is also very important. Mm. Magicians are very good with the show side of things, but the business side we might not be so good, lah.
Really?
I think the same is true for like a lot of creatives
and artists. Same thing.
We are all very like creative. We can do our own work and all that kind of thing. When it comes to marketing ourselves, you know, like.
Because we focus all our attention on the craft, because that's what we fell in love.
Correct.
And the biggest disappointment for me actually as an artist, when I met the market, i.e. the business side, right, was that actually skill doesn't matter that much. The marketing mattered a lot more, because your average audience or average client actually cannot tell the difference between the 80% and the 90%, you know?
Correct.
Then why do I bother?
Yeah.
For the love of the craft, but the business side, how do I make money off of that 10% that actually takes a lot more time to train to be good at?
That's correct.
Right.
I completely agree.
So have you squared that somehow and reconciled that somehow?
Mm.
Are you still figuring it out?
I mean, yes, I've been in the market long enough. So I have also like established the working relationship, like in Singapore with the local event companies and all that.
Yeah.
Because over 2 decades, right? So I've built a pretty nice relationship. They literally see me since I was a kid. Grow up and do all these shows and all that.
Yeah.
So very grateful for them giving me opportunities and all that. And I just didn't know how.
What was your like first big break? And you realized like, oh my god, I'm going to make this work.
No first big break. I kind of like naturally just went into it in the sense that like I said earlier, I was in a magic shop and people asked me to kind of perform and all that. Then I started doing close up magic for private parties, cocktail reception and all that kind of thing. And then suddenly I start to move on into like stage magic and we start progress, and then did family shows, and then I did children's parties for a bit, and then I wanted to go into the corporate company, corporate dinner and dancers and all that, and that's how I kind of progressed.
You talked about like getting to the cruise ship stuff. How did that begin?
I was hired to go to a show and then the host, the MC for that particular dinner was Hossein Leong. And he asked me, he was like, "Hey, Jeremy, are you interested to, go on a cruise ship?" I was like, okay. Never been, right? Mm. So he was like, "Yeah, I'll get somebody to contact you." Mm. Because somebody actually looked for him to work on to perform on the cruise ship.
Mm.
And then so I didn't think much of it. Back then, I would consider that like peak of my corporate career, there were no low seasons. There was, wasn't worried about. It was very steady already.
Mm.
And then I was also constantly like coming up with new material, new shows, and all that kind of stuff. So I was very happy about it. And then I think weeks or months passed, right? And then suddenly I received an email. It's like, is this even like legit?
Yeah, can sound quite.
Because for us, we only heard of like Star Cruises.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe a bit of Royal Caribbean, right? Yeah. And that's about it, right? So I was like, my first contract, they were like, would you like to, come and perform on the cruise ship for like 2 months? We were like, okay, sure. 3 months, 4.5 months, 6.5 months.
Yeah.
The corporate gig was doing well. We cannot just like
abandon.
Then so I told my wife Angel, I said, this could be the best decision that we ever make, or the worst. Because we really don't know how life on board would be and whether we enjoy it or not, right?
Yeah.
And then I say, okay, best or worst 6.5 months of our life, right?
Mm.
And then it's like, okay, we just drop everything and just go.
Wow.
Is the money better on cruise ships?
A lot better. And if you are away for 180 days, you don't have to pay. You have to declare, technically.
But, I mean, of course, there are trade-offs, right?
Away from the family.
Yeah.
Away from the family. I think that is the biggest thing. The worst thing that can happen is when you're working on a cruise ship and then somebody in the family passes away. Then, you are maybe like 2 more sea days before you can reach land. Then you got to fly back and then, go do all that kind of stuff. It's very, very bad.
Damn.
And I've seen it happen. So,
wow.
I think from what we know about cruise ships, usually like the people working there are pretty diverse.
Yeah.
And like
over 50 nationalities.
A lot of like cultural differences at all. Mm. Like, have you ever had to navigate that?
Amongst the crew, as seafarers, we kind of know each other in the sense that we all know that we are all away from home and all that kind of thing, you know. So we are very understanding to each other, lah. Yes, there are always like cultural differences, and that's where we learn more about each other's culture, words that we say, food that we eat, and all that kind of stuff. And within the crew, we celebrate different holidays, lah. Mm. So like Orthodox Christmas and all that kind of stuff, and then we get to try their
Hanukkah,
food also,
that,
yeah,
right.
That kind. So it also makes us learn about their cultures and all that. But most of the time is just hang out at a crew bar, drinking, and you know.
Alcohol is free, is it?
No lah, cheap lah.
Duty cheap free for all right.
It's the for duty crew, for that crew. Makes it expensive. For crew, right. For crew. Yeah. Oh. In the passenger area, of course, it's expensive lah. But alcohol is like, yeah.
But you've always been with your wife on the cruise, right? Because from the beginning,
yes. But since COVID, she has took over the family business. So nowadays, okay. I travel. So like November of last year, I started traveling for cruise ships again, and I did it all alone.
Oh, right. So you have to change out some of the tricks,
correct?
The selection of things that you did.
Yep. And then I have to run everything now, including like tech run rehearsals and all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
and then
how has it been?
Tiring. But I love it lah. I mean, you cannot complain lah. I'm literally doing like what I love.
Right.
You know, you get paid to travel and perform. And as an artist, I feel like you can grow better.
Mm.
Like in, because you have the whole theatre to yourself. You have the crew that is supporting you, the lighting, the sound, the backstage people and all that.
Yeah.
And so you can decide like, oh, okay, this week I want to do this show.
Yeah.
I want to try two new things.
Yeah.
And then this is my technical rider. You know, just follow this. And
it's okay
one. I want to change the mood and all that.
So you are the boss of the program, is it?
Yes, but the one big thing for cruise ships is this, and a lot of people like don't realize, if say for example you got a 6 month contract, right? If your rating in your first week falls below like 7 out of 10, right? They can ask you to go home and cancel the rest of your 6 month contract.
No, like notice period, whatever. Is it?
They will tell you lah. They will tell you.
They'll tell you lah.
Yeah.
You
but if you don't improve or like you've got to be 100% like every single time.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got kena before?
No.
Oh, okay. just check. I mean, you brought it up, right? So of course I'll ask. Right?
Yeah. But how do they? I've seen it happen before. I've seen it happen before. We were doing like I think one of the ships was in Taiwan, one of the ships was in China, and then same company lah. So we were like doing what we call China season lah. And then the other magician on the ship was like,
oh wait, the other magician on the ship. So there's multiple.
No. Magician. So one ship, one magician. That usually would be. Yeah.
The
so,
ship
so
magician.
Ships,
right.
Yeah. Right, correct.
Wow, that's fascinating.
So from what I'm hearing is that. Being a cruise magician is kind of like a step up over like the corporate magician because you're given a lot more resources.
Correct.
To plan the show around.
And it's very different lah, in the sense that like in Singapore, our corporate dinner and dances are very, for a lack of a better word, we are kind of there to fill time.
Like MC like that lah.
The MC at least he has a purpose there, right? To
magician also got purpose,
to, no?
You entertain,
the magician is there to let the MC rest and fill time,
Ah, really, man? No
technically, lah. If you look at it very broadly, lah, right? Four hours of entertainment, right?
Yeah.
So the MC could cover the whole show if he wanted, or if he or she can play enough games and all that kind of stuff, right?
Oh my god, the games.
Technically, yes, ma, correct?
Yeah.
So the magicians are here so that the MC can, you
chill,
know, or any other entertainers, it could be jugglers, it could be singers, it could be a band, it could be, you know. This part of their entertainment, like, could be anybody, ma. If they have enough awards, long service awards to give out every year,
I mean, yeah,
then it will fill up all 4 hours, right? Yeah. And then for us as entertainers that we go there, we are fighting against the people who are eating, want to go smoke break, toilet break, and all that kind of thing. They yam sing during our show, you know. And then like, if you wanted to make it a bit more moody, like dim the lights a bit, and you know.
Like an atmosphere, like a show, right?
Yeah, and then they'll go like, oh, cannot leh. It's a safety issue because the exit signs and all that. Or if there's like MPs or something, and then you cannot dim the lights. And it's a security risk kind of thing. And then you'll be like, okay.
So back to Raymond's question is like, the cruise actually is a place that you can
kind of
fit in art.
It allows you to grow as an artist. Mm. I'm not saying that the corporate cannot, because through the corporate shows, I've done like at least 10, 15 years of corporate gigs locally and in Asia. I also get to learn different things. Yeah. Like sometimes the event companies can be quite nice, so they will stop serving food. Because usually the dinner and dances in Singapore, they are like the Chinese wedding, dish by dish, right? 8 dishes for that night.
No stop one, right?
Correct, keep right? So sometimes they will stop serving
for the show.
And then do the show, and then they will carry on that kind. So then you can have the attention of everybody lah.
What would you say are some of the more important aspects that people usually forget about when you want to become a magician and succeed in the industry?
I think being able to adapt and constantly improve yourself is something that is could be missing in a lot of like magicians.
Right.
Yeah. Like I know magicians from all around the world and I can see that the slightly older generation, not just only in Singapore, but they kind of like in their comfort zone.
Yes.
So they kind of stayed in their era and they didn't want to learn new things to improve.
Yeah. 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 We know that you, during COVID, obviously cruises stopped. Yeah. Live performances stopped. So you had to adapt to content creation. Tell us a bit more about that and how that
Yeah, grew. So it actually kind of came together. So in 2020, I had 9 months worth of cruise ship contracts.
Yeah.
So in end of 2019, I started to buy camera gear and all that kind of thing. I wanted to be a vlogger.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I had all these cruise ships for 9 months and I could do like cruise ship comparisons, cruise ship tours.
Destinations.
And then because I was also in like the, I can go to the crew areas and all that, I can let people in on
I love that stuff.
Know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of insights that, you know, and then I was like, wow, this is going to be great, right?
Yeah.
So I did like 3 vlogs at the end of 2019. So it was like Best Burger at Sea, my cabin tour, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the third one was me being stuck at sea lah for extra 11 days, rejected by 5 countries because the world has gone to shit, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then in 2020, in 2 weeks, my 9 months worth of contract cancelled. No
but
compensation.
But you were at sea when COVID hit
Yeah.
How does that even sort out?
Me and my wife were the only 2 Singaporeans on that particular ship. Yeah.
Wow. It was in Europe, right?
No, it was within Asia. We were in, actually, it got rejected. The ship couldn't dock in Philippines, Taiwan, Japan, Guam, and Thailand.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the
Cambodia took us. So we went to every port.
So the pilot, whoever drives it, was like,
the captain. Because, like, the port or the transport minister say yes, but then the health minister can override.
Ah, that's right.
We don't have enough people in Okinawa to hold, 2,000 of you all, right? And then arrange your flights and all that kind of shit. So, in the end, Cambodia took us in.
Right, Cambodia.
On Valentine's Day. So.
Wow, how romantic.
February 14th, I'll never forget. 2020.
So you have all this new gear, you had this new content plan now you're going to do.
Correct.
Then COVID hit. Then,
and then COVID hit, right? So when we came back to Singapore, like I said, me and my wife were the only Singaporeans on board. So we had to do this thing back then called the quarantine order.
Yep.
So they put you at home or in the facility for 2 weeks. So thankfully we were at home. So because me and my wife, we live together only. Then two of us, we were at home, and then every now and then they will call us and then video call.
Yeah, you can go out. No?
Yeah, where's Miss Lee? Then we'll show her, that kind of thing. So anyways, in that 2 weeks, I devoured everything I needed to know about cameras, lighting, what is shutter speed, what is ISO, what is the
aperture,
what is f-stop, and that kind of thing, and editing. Like what is J cut, what is L cut, what is, you know, all these different styles of editing, whether or not should I have an intro.
Oh, that's amazing. You're upskilling.
Everything. Yeah.
And all self taught online.
All self taught, everything on YouTube. Yeah. I watch everything like 1.25 speed, right? Just so that I can devour all this information. And then during that time also, I was in touch with some of my magician friends from Malaysia and Philippines. And we started like planning to do like virtual shows lah. Mm. Nobody has heard of Zoom.
Yep.
And then, you know, it was free back then, unlimited, right? Yeah. So yes, we literally, three of us, we would hang out like all the way until 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Hmm. Just to, hey, how's this lighting now? If I put this, you know,
it's so cool.
If I use this dome instead of the honeycomb, is it better?
Right, kind of thing.
And then this angle, okay. And then if I show you, does it become clear? And then
the focus
and all that kind of thing, you know? And then this trick can see, is it too dark? Is it, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we were quite ready early, like maybe March, April.
Of 2020.
Of 2020, yeah. And then we were already like doing virtual shows. So we would invite friends and families to come, and then we would record the whole session so that we have things to cut, like reactions and all that kind of thing. And then we can make a promo video to send out to event companies.
So it's live, but you do cuts?
No. So it's live. Oh. We record the whole thing and then we edit that particular show into a promo video, and then we take the promo video and then we sell it to different event companies.
We pitch the event
company and say, look, we can do this.
Yep.
So I'm still trying to find a way to not step away from magic but pivot to still do magic.
That's
but
brilliant.
in a different platform.
Virtual way, yeah.
And then back then when we started pitching, it was like, bro, this thing is gonna like end in like 3 months. Why you spend all the money? And
how wrong were they?
I remember that phase. I remember like,
so it washed over soon, right?
Yeah, like SARS, right?
Yeah, we like SARS. Yeah. And then like, oh my god, it became
just keep going and going.
And then different variants came out and all that kind of thing. And then, but it was a kind of like a blessing in disguise also. So the most of 2020, I focused on doing the virtual shows because I still need to put food on the table.
Yep.
Right? And it was fun for me lah. It's a different platform to perform.
Yes.
And whatever the camera sees, the camera sees.
The tricks are different.
Right. Yeah.
Card tricks are more viable now for the screen. You know.
And then like, how will you ask somebody to select a card?
Yeah, how do you do
that? Or if they cannot shuffle a deck of cards, how are you going to, you know? So all these things kind of got me going. It's completely a new genre of magic now, right? And then on top of that, there is also the tech that's involved, right? The gear.
Mm.
So lighting, camera, angles, all
software.
That.
Software.
Two cameras, because now you need a top-down shot to display.
Yes,
and then what do you use to switch?
Yeah.
Then OBS, and then, you know, lower thirds and all that kind of stuff. Intro videos when people come in and that kind of thing. So it suddenly became a one-man, you know, I have to do everything. I have
your
to
videographer,
press a lot of buttons. Correct.
Mixer.
Yeah.
Sound guy.
Everything. Yeah.
Everything.
Jeremy, a lot of like your content online, right? Teaches people how to do tricks. Has there been like pushback from like, let's say, older magicians? Maybe they say like, you know, you're now spoiling the market. You're making the tricks that we do not viable anymore. Do you get that?
Yeah, so I've been teaching magic online for a bit, since I think end of 2021 or something like that. But then I'm a very old school magician also. I think that magic secrets should be kept as magic secrets lah. It shouldn't be, you know. But you must also understand, like, all these older generation of magicians who gatekeep all these secrets, right? They are not seeing the future. Like, now if you ask any young magician or magicians that started their career in the last 10 years and ask them, where's their first magic trick that they ever learned? They'll tell you YouTube. You know, things have changed. Yes, I can find more quality magic in books and, you know, attending conventions and speaking with other people and other magicians that I aspire to be. But these people, they have no clue, ma. We've been in the industry for so long, so we know who to look for and all that. But these people who started magic literally learned from YouTube.
Right.
During my time, there wasn't such a thing. In fact, if I wanted to buy a trick last time, they used to send us a letter. We would take something and then pay them the money and snail mail the letter out back.
Wow.
And then you wait for like 3 months and then you cannot, there's no tracking for your shipment and all that. That's how long ago. How long ago that was. So for me, like I kind of restarted teaching magic on the internet as well. But at the same time, I would like to keep things that I personally use and for serious magicians, or rather for people who really want to step into this craft, I would put all these tricks behind a paywall.
Right.
Like the more advanced stuff.
Yeah. The basic stuff,
sleight of hand, all that kind of thing, it's, you know,
can here.
Just for you to learn, and at the same time, see if you enjoy the way I teach on video.
Mm. Right, right.
And then, you know, hopefully if I... when I start doing all this more advanced, intermediate advanced things, and then I will put it behind a paywall.
Right.
Because I think those should be reserved for people who really are interested.
Very serious.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I remember like I was a fan of Penn and Teller.
Mm.
So they would also show their tricks. Like they had one where, I forgot what was the exact trick, but it was like
cups and balls with a clear cup.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and also they did one where
they go underneath.
Yes, then they show the transparent space thing.
Yeah, yeah. Different, the head and goes somewhere.
I remember seeing not just magicians, but the audience was, they showed a shot of the audience and they're like, some of the aunties are like, why are you ruining it?
Yeah,
some people love it, right?
Yeah,
because
it
is so much skill involved as well.
Correct.
Do you have a sort of stand on that, like apart from just the paywall serious stuff?
I have. So that's something I do in my show as well. And the reason is because, like in my show, I actually tell the audience I hate magic. But I say, hear me out. Because like if you watch enough talent shows and all that kind of thing, any singer, musician and all that, they can get into the audience and receive a standing ovation in the first 2 seconds. Right. And because there's a lot of emotions and relatability. Like, last time when I broke up with my girlfriend, I heard this song, and now you sing this song. It brings back so much emotion.
Right.
That kind of thing. And musicians, pianists, violinists, and all that kind of thing, when they are performing, they are actually displaying their skill. For a concert pianist, the camera comes down to their hands. You actually can see how fast and all that kind of thing. Magicians, we practice the same amount, if not more, than all these musicians. Because we have a lot more other skill sets.
Oh, I see what you mean.
But we practice so hard just to hide our skills.
Right. You are good if they don't see it.
Correct.
Right.
So that's something I do in my show. And I explain to them this. And then I'll lead into something.
That's brilliant.
So I'll bring a spectator up on stage.
Yep.
And then I'll perform a magic for this person.
Right.
But everybody else gets to see how it's done.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that I do on social media is... to kind of educate people, don't gamble with strangers. I think that's the main overarching theme. So I would actually show them why, you know, shuffling on the table is better than, you know, shuffling like that. So some people like understand this form of education.
Yeah.
And then some people are going, oh, can you teach me this? Because I need to use it for my...
And that's wrong, right?
That's clearly wrong. It's easy to scam people.
There are people who get scammed by that kind of... So it's you use your skills for evil.
Correct. Oh. So I'm on the... good side lah. In that sense, I try to educate people, don't gamble with strangers, because you really don't know, like, you know, whatever skill sets other people have and all that kind of stuff. And I have also like my friends have called me to go down to a place and go, hey, this guy a bit sus.
Gambling,
like, you know, like he keeps winning whenever he deals.
Yes.
He and another person.
Yeah.
Then like, could you like come down and see? I just want to make sure, you know, because they got this like weekly poker game or whatever.
Right.
And then they'll hire a dealer and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
There are magic clubs that will go, we will kick you out, we will ban you from joining us and all that kind of thing because you expose magic online and, you know, teach magic for free. I understand.
Yep.
You know, that's like the first rule of magic. Don't tell people how it's done, right? Then if you really did that, why are there so many magicians in the world?
Still have, yeah.
Right, and if you say like, because if you want to learn magic, you must pay. And I've been fighting with this thing with myself and other magicians for a very, very long time. If you want to learn how to play the guitar today, go YouTube. Millions, right?
If excellent.
You, millions of tutorials, right? If you want to learn how to draw, if you want to learn how to play the piano, if you want to learn any skill, if you want to learn how to do plumbing.
Right.
YouTube. Woodworking, everything YouTube, right? And because magic has this special secret thing, right? That everybody tries and gatekeep and, you know, all that. But I think the magicians who try and gatekeep this, right, forget one thing. And that is, this person can learn the secret, but can never perform like you.
Right. Absolutely.
How you deliver the trick, how you present it, your, you know,
persona
and all
yeah.
that kind of thing,
yeah.
your showmanship or when you choose to perform this trick, you know, that kind of thing, nobody can take that away from you, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying that all secrets can be, you know, freely just given out, but I feel that it should kind of like slowly go with the times also.
Yeah.
It shouldn't, you shouldn't really just, yeah.
Because we've seen it happen, I think, among our generation.
Correct.
So I remember David Copperfield, that was a huge thing when he made the Statue of Liberty.
Correct, yeah. Right? Walk through the China.
And that was a TV format thing. So he had to innovate the adaptation to a new medium.
Correct.
Then we saw, I think, David Blaine do it. They make fun of his persona because he always look at the camera, like, when he does a trick.
Yeah,
he has a more deadpan when he talks, so he don't really have inflection. Yeah. It's not like, everybody gather around. So he also innovated his own.
Correct.
But the tricks could be the same, and it's very simple. Yep. I'm going to levitate. Right?
Yep,
it's very
simple.
Then now it's TikTok. Then you will see what that is like when young magicians take that same sort of thing and they translate it into TikTok.
I mean, I respect people who take magic as an art form and teach it properly.
Mm.
Okay. What I cannot stand is if, say, and this has happened.
Yep.
Like, I've seen a lot of YouTube channels and all that kind of thing that has this. So they will take a product that somebody came up with.
Mm.
Okay? Like, you can take a can of Coke.
Yeah.
Okay? It looks, it's crushed, and you can see there's a hole in this, in the can. So it's empty, right? I can do this, and then you see the start to pop. And then it restores. And then the top, the hole, I give it a rub, it now it's sealed. And then you open, you can hear the tss, and then you pour it out, it's a full can of Coke.
Right.
So somebody actually came up with this idea
and
sold it as a product. And then these so-called magician content creators are just taking these products that they bought or they happen to know the secret of.
So it's like
and they are exposing it for the general public, free.
Yeah.
Right, you know? And I think that's wrong.
Yes, I think that's
very, very wrong. Yeah. But these are the people with millions of subscribers, don't even need to talk, just show you how it's done.
Ruining it for the people who
correct. And then millions of views.
So someone took someone had the creativity to invent something. Then all they do is just buy the thing, just quickly
show it.
Yeah. And sometimes even badly.
Oh, that's horrible.
That's rough.
Yeah.
That's rough.
So I think those are the people that the old school magicians should try and prevent.
Yes.
You know, we are teaching magic to educate the next generation and hopefully they
inspire
they can become better magicians through our teaching.
Yeah.
Like in my videos, I don't just tell you the secret. I tell you how to practice. I tell you maybe you can use this presentation.
Mm.
Maybe you can use, you know, so I give you a lot of other things than just the secret.
Mm.
If you are here just for the secret, then okay, it's fine with me. You will never become a better magician.
Mm.
You are just learning secrets that you want to perform for friends, family and all that kind of thing. Fine, no problem. You know, here's a secret. But if you want to learn more, then you stay until the end of the video. Because then after, so I'll perform, I will explain, then I'll give you tips and presentation ideas and, you know, how to practice and what you should do, timing and all that kind of stuff. So those are the things that, because I've been through them, I know, and now I can help you fast track your learning curve.
Right.
You know, instead of, okay, now, because what I used to do is I used to watch or read, then I learned a secret, and then now I was like, okay, so I need to find somebody to perform.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then over the years, as I performed the same trick over and over again, then I started to develop, maybe this one can do it this way.
Yeah.
Or maybe I can use blank cards instead, like the day we did for Jason Leong.
Yeah.
And all that kind of thing. So, but now, in my tutorials, I can now, here's some ideas that you can use, you know, because this is all my experience.
Right.
And so I think the older generation of magicians shouldn't come after me and go, you shouldn't, you know, do this.
Mm.
Instead, they should go after those who blatantly buy products that people are selling,
right,
that they spend a lot of time creating and all that kind of thing, marketing, selling to magicians, and go, you see this? This is how it's done.
Mm.
But millions of views, right? For us,
do you think there's a similar dilemma in the art world?
Absolutely. So I love the point about it's almost like you are not your trick, you are how you perform the trick.
Mm.
You are not I'm not my ability to draw.
Mm.
I'm my ability, I'm taking that ability, then processing it through my experiences,
correct,
who I am as a person, my sort of charm, if I have any, then it comes out through us onto a comic book. And it's the same because I think even more evidently for magic, because showmanship is such a big part of that. Or even perceived non-showmanship, like very deadpan people, like deadpan comedians, or David Blaine's style of monotone talking and that face, you know? That is a style. You know? So it's not just the trick. I love that.
But that made me think of like, okay, this is very random, like Hitler's paintings. So if you go look at Hitler's paintings, right, they are like, they look nice. I don't know if it's, it's yeah, I mean, they're just painting, but there's, people always say like there's no soul to it. It's just like a scenery or something. But there's no like showmanship.
But to be fair, I don't defend Hitler.
Oh my god, you defend Hitler on a podcast.
To be fair, he's learning how to paint at the time. And also, I think people are saying the no soul thing in context of the fact that he's Hitler. If any old person painted it with no context, I don't think you can. Oh, that's a Hitler one. Because no soul.
Correct.
That's fair enough. Because people say that about AI also. They say AI writing no soul. AI artwork got no soul. But honestly, I feel like people say that because they, a lot of times, because they know that it's AI. You put it side by side, I think a lot of times you cannot tell. That's my opinion.
Yeah,
and I'm not a supporter of AI.
Or Hitler.
Or Hitler.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. My favorite trick that I ever saw was the Penn and Teller trick. It was the one where there's a flower that's lit, and then it casts a shadow on a piece of canvas. And then the I think it's Teller. He cuts the shadow with a knife, and the real flower falls. And there was that level of poetry there. That I feel like sometimes when I look at the stuff like I see on TikTok that requires a certain different amount of upfront
hook commitment,
because TikTok is so fast, right? So a certain amount of artistry, like the setup, the mood is lost a little bit. Like, do you feel that way when you transit into new things, or when you do genres that are not maybe your favorite kind of thing? Then you say, but for the business I gotta do it.
Yeah. The shows that I do, there are certain things that I don't like to perform personally. Either it's very old, or you know, I've moved away from tricks like this and all that. But people like. The audience still love it, right? So I still do it. I got to strike a balance of what I like to perform versus what they like to see. And then we go from there.
So is that a quota, like? I will fit 20% new stuff and art stuff inside.
No lah, I think it's the whole show. Yeah, how we package the whole show. And for that thing you say about the Penn & Teller trick, right?
Yeah.
Versus what we see on TikTok now, like if your first 2 to 3 seconds, if you don't hook the audience, you're swipe away, right?
Yeah.
So that's where I find perfect balance in. Because I'm on both. I'm in the theatres, on a cruise ship, where I can do all this storytelling and, you know, tell my story and life experiences and what through a magic trick.
Right.
And I'm also on TikTok, right? I'm also content creation and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I get the best of both worlds. I get to be an artist when I'm on the cruise ship, and then I get to be a content creator when I'm, you know, making content on the internet.
But for the cruise ship, you also, I guess, design a show for the satisfaction of the audience, right? And then when you try new stuff, sometimes it might not work, right?
Yeah. So we constantly try them, lor. So like maybe in a whole 45-minute show, I'll put one new thing inside. But I know the rest of the 90% is 100% safe.
Right.
If not, we can never improve ourselves. Then we'll be stagnant. Then we will just stay in that same spot for 10, 20 years.
Well, I think we end it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have fun.
So thank you also for watching our podcast. And if somehow magically our career goes down the drain and disappears, right? Like he can make cards do with sleight of hands. This will be our last podcast. And thank you very much for watching our podcast.
We're grateful for everything.
We're grateful for everything, and grateful for having Jeremy as our possibly last guest. Thank you very much. Bye bye.